Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runners, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. We are brought to you by ToughManTry.com, everyone.org. That's EveryWN.org, a cool new half marathon and 5K series. RunCatalina.com. We have the Catalina Eco Marathon coming up on Saturday, November 19th. Our Challenged Athletes Foundation, we've raised over $75 million to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. Check out any of our interviews on iTunes or on Babbittville.com. And as always, endurance lives here. Our next guest is a gentleman I go back a long, long way with. He's won 7 regional Emmys for his work. He's the host of Tiny House Nation on A&E's FYI Network. Mr. John Weisbarth joins us. John, how the heck are you?
Bob, I'm good. This is a big moment for us. You're right. I go back a long way. I used to board off your show, and I'm finally a guest on it.
Is that the funniest thing? I was looking at that the other day. I'm like, wait, John, I think John at one time was working our show back in the early mighty 690 days. It was a 1090.
No, it was 690. Mighty 690 in like the late 1990s.
Wow.
I was your board off. Sundays, I'd come in and you'd put on a show. You're always very kind to me. You'd float me some tickets to like cool events every once in a while.
Well, it's been great.
We've come a long way.
It's been great to watch your career, watching you doing the Padres telecast, being a major anchor at Channel 4 San Diego. And so you also grew up in Coronado, right?
Yeah, I'm in Coronado right now as we speak. Yeah, I'm a San Diego guy. I was born in Florida but moved out to San Diego when I was 3 with my dad, who was in the Navy, and so we all came out here and we've been here ever since.
And soccer was your thing, high school, Olympic development team. That you played soccer for a long time.
Yeah, well, yeah. Listen, I never quite made it to the next level. I thought, I played on the Olympic development team. I made the California state team as a junior in high school. I was like, I'm on my way, but I wasn't. I didn't play in college or anything. Now I just play for fun. Great game for sure. It's basically, I just go out so I don't get super fat. It's just a chance to run around and be a little skinny.
When did you start thinking that media might be for you?
You know what? When I was younger, so my dad was a handyman, and he was also really involved in community theater. So he would like build sets and do all that kind of stuff at the Coronado Community Playhouse.
Yep.
And so I was just always around, and every once in a while there'd be a play that would come through that needed a little kid in it, and I was kind of the resident little kid. So at a pretty young age, I realized that my ego really liked, people applauding for it or whatever. So I kind of caught the bug young, and, I even in 7th grade, I was in a movie, a real low-budget, basically takeoff of The Goonies.
Yeah.
But it was a great experience, and that never left me. I really liked, I really liked the process of sort of storytelling and the movie magic part of how it all went together. And then, then I sort of stopped, and I was just into sports a lot because the choice was kind of like either go, be a guy that auditions all the time, means driving up to LA, every weekend for a 5-minute audition and then coming back. And that meant not being able to play sports. And I just kind of decided I'd rather do the, soccer or baseball, all that kind of stuff. But then after college, I kind of got back to it with the help of our friend, Jim Laslovic.
So did you started at 1090 is a producer and board op, and did that lead to TV?
Yeah. Well, I was actually interning at, for Jim Laslovic at the TV station, the NBC affiliate in San Diego as well. And then got hired on, actually in the newsroom, not even in sports, but editing. Basically I was just keeping my foot in the door, right? That's how you have to do it when you start. I was working overnight shifts. So at NBC 7:39, my shift was 2 a.m. to 9 a.m. It was, terrible, but
that's what you got to do, right?
Yeah, kind of kept me in the game. And then I got a break, and I was on a show about high school sports here in San Diego. It's a Union Tribune high school sports TV show. They paid me $150 a month.
Ooh, you are rolling in it, baby.
Yeah, to do a game of the week stuff. But that got me on Channel 4.
Yes.
And then I was able to kind of parlay that into the Padres and so on and so forth.
Well, Channel 4 was a very vibrant station for a long time when they had the Padres and we had our All Out show on there. And
Yeah. There
was some really cool stuff. Obviously, the cooking guy and Jim Mitchell. Talk a little bit about just how Channel 4 evolved over time to become sort of the San Diego station.
Well, I mean, really, it's, you know, the long and the short of it is it all had to do with the Padres. And Larry Lucchino, back around 1996, who was then the president of the Padres, he came up with what was a novel idea at the time, and that was to broadcast all of your team's games and put them on one place and one channel and build a fan base that way. Because sort of the conventional wisdom was, oh, if you put it on TV, then people won't come to the games. They'll stay home and watch, and that's not good for our box office.
Yeah.
And Larry Lucchino said, no. Put them all on, build a bunch of fans, and that will ultimately help the bottom line, which is now seems so obvious. That's what every major league team does. But back then, Channel 4 was one of the very first in. And because Channel 4 was owned by Cox Communications, and it was, you know, it was a good number. It wasn't like Channel 127.
Yes.
They were able to kind of strike a deal and get the rights to the Padres, and then all of that stuff you mentioned sprung from that. You know, there was San Diego State, USD, a lot of sports broadcasting, a lot of news magazine came up, and Dennis Morgino, who was the head guy over there, really hand-picked the on-air talent and cultivated this really cool station. It was a really neat place to come up, to be 25 years old and learning with a bunch of pros like that, as opposed to what you normally would have to do is go to Yuma, Arizona, where everyone is just beginning and you're all kind of trying to figure it out. Instead, I was able to be mentored by some people that have been in the business 20, sometimes 25 years, and it was a huge advantage to me moving forward with my career.
So, you know, it's interesting when you mention that about baseball. Back in the day, when radio, they went through the same thing.
Yeah.
The Dodgers and the Giants in New York, I think it was McPhale. McPhale decided that he was going
to
broadcast every game, and he put Red Barber on, and everybody was like, oh, you're going to kill your attendance. And it was just the opposite. It created fans. It created a fan base, and people came out to the game.
But exactly.
And it's funny that baseball would go, then TV, same type of thing.
Yeah, I know.
Not really.
Well, listen, that's why I was always a fan of history, right? There's all these lessons that we've already learned.
Yes.
So I try to,
God.
So we don't have to keep learning them over again. Kind of look back sometimes. They're like, oh, I've already figured this out.
So you had a golf reality show called Playing Through.
I love that show, Bob. That show's going to come back. I don't know how or when, but I basically own that show, the idea for that show. So whenever I get some time again, figure it out. I want to bring that show back. That was a really fun show to do.
And what was the format for that?
Essentially, the idea was I would show up at a driving range.
Yep.
And I would ambush the golfers there. I would show up on like a Monday morning or a Wednesday at lunch where you just got like those guys that are going out to hit like a bucket of balls or ladies, you know, before work or on their lunch break. And I would just walk right up to them as they're hitting and say, hey, do you want to play golf with me? And I wouldn't give them any other details than that. Eventually, I mean, you get a lot of, no, I can't, blah, 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 blah. Eventually someone would say yes. We'd whisk them away to one of the really nice courses here in town. It wasn't just in San Diego. We actually traveled with it as well. But whisk them away to a really nice course, pace the round and for lunch. And then on top of that, we'd play a whole bunch of fun games and give them chances to win really cool prizes. Everything from clubs and golf apparel to, you know, gift certificates for dinner or iPod, electronics, that kind of stuff. So it was a really fun show to do. And we did it completely legit. Never knew who we were going to have. And then we just play all these crazy games. And
it
really was a fun show.
Well, sometime you need to come out and play a little speed golf with us.
Well, we did that for one of our holes. Absolutely. There would be a timed hole as well where it's like, look, I don't care what you shoot, but you got to be done with this par four, you know, in 2 minutes and 15 seconds.
I love that. Yeah, we actually I did a number of made-for-TV tournaments where we would run and play, And we did one in Maui, the Red Bull Open. We had guys chest bumping at the start, had a DJ at the first tee.
I love it.
Opposite of anything you'd ever see in golf, right? And it was two people on a team, each team representing a different sport. So two decathletes, two beach volleyball players.
Hole one
guy would run and play while his buddy caddied for him from the cart. And you'd rotate. So each guy runs nine and caddies for nine. So
that's
it was
great. That's the type of stuff you do.
I love different type of golf.
Quite frankly, Bob, golf needs that. And they're the first to admit it. I mean, ever since Tiger Woods sort of, you know, went south and even just getting older, they've lost that younger demographic. Even though there's some really hot young golfers out there right now, the interest isn't it was like when Tiger Woods came on the scene. And the golf industry has felt that. You can see it. I mean, they are looking for different ways to reinvent themselves, to make it more accessible. And that's what our show was. Our show was kind of like what you're talking about. It was taking the country club aspect out of it a little bit and just being like,
let's go play.
Be snooty. This can be really fun also.
Yeah, that to me was one of the best parts about playing. I called it the Dr. Kevorkian theory of golf because basically if I'm going to suck at golf, why suck in 5 hours when I can suck in 1 hour, right? Why not eliminate the 5 hour part and just go out there and play crappy golf? But sometimes,
wives and girlfriends everywhere rejoice because it's like only 1 hour instead of 5 hours.
And you find yourself, because usually you're carrying less clubs, usually you find yourself playing better golf because you don't think. You run up and you hit the ball. It's funny because golf is such a thinking process type of deal. And every other sport you do, soccer, baseball, basketball, you react to a ball. And when you make golf more like that, people play better. It's a pretty weird concept, but sometimes you got to come out and we'll play the Loma Santa Fe exec course. We'll play 36 holes in about 90 minutes. And it's so much fun. I have these little golf bags with spikes on the bottom. So you carry, three or four clubs and, you put balls in your volley shorts and got to be first guys out in the morning. So wear a little headlamp. It is unbelievably fun.
Sounds awesome. I'd love to sometime.
So besides the golf, then you had your Weekend Warrior. Was that show at the same time or a separate entity?
No, that was a separate sort of deal. That was separate basically.
Okay. And then you had Quick Fix.
Quick Fix was just something that I did with some buddies.
Okay.
To sort of boost my resume more than anything. I mean, we kind of released some webisodes
on
the internet, but no one ever saw them. It got me a meeting with the folks that produce Dirty Jobs for Mike Rowe, but never went any further than that.
What the thing with, I just was flipping through one day and ran into Tiny House Nation. I'm like, wait a second, that's John. And now I'm assuming that you and Zach are longtime buddies.
It really seems like that, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does.
I didn't meet him until we started the show.
Really?
And I have to say, it's a little bit of an arranged marriage. You don't know what you're going to get.
Sure.
And it happens in sports, too, where you're like, oh, you got your broadcast partner. And it's like, well, okay, let's see how the chemistry is. We got really lucky. He truly is one of my best friends now. And he's if you've seen him on the show, you know exactly how he is. He's just this really kind, really talented. I say he's spiritual, even though he's not necessarily religious. He's got like this Buddha-esque quality about him, and it's just a real pleasure to get paired up with somebody like that because we spent a lot of time together, that's for sure.
So were you into this whole tiny house thing before Tiny House Nation? What did you know about that whole growing industry?
Well, if I'm going to be completely honest with you, I did not know much about it.
Yeah.
What I found was that a lot of what my values already were aligned with what the tiny house people were talking about. And what I mean by that is, being environmentally responsible with natural resources is a big thing. I mean, I think anyone that lives in Southern California is a little bit hyper aware of that with the water and the drought. But just, using electricity, all that stuff, just being respectful of the natural resources and careful with how you use it. And also the fiscal responsibility of not getting in over your head. I think so many people learn that lesson the hard way with the housing, bubble crash.
Yes.
Of 2007 and 2008, and that does play a big factor into why I think the tiny house movement is hitting when it's hitting. A lot of people reacting to that, having been burned, and thinking like, man, I don't know that that's my dream anymore, to have this gigantic house that I don't really own.
The bank owns and I'm renting from the bank, and they can pretty much take it back any time if my rate goes up.
Yeah, and they did.
Yes. Oh, I know. They lost it all. So when you do a show like that, do people write in and say, listen, I've got X amount of money and I want to, how do you choose your stories?
Well, truthfully, there's a whole division. The production company that I'm working for now doing the show is out of New York. They have a whole casting department. And at this point, we're solicited all the time.
I'm sure.
I personally, via either email or social media, am hit up, I don't know, one or two times a day, which, is like, 7 to like 14 emails a week of people, asking for Zach and I to come build them a house. And what I do is I refer them to our casting department, who then goes through and, this isn't a show where you win a tiny house.
No, they pay, right?
They pay for it. They got to come to the table with about 40 grand. By the time we're done, the house is worth 70 to 80, about twice that. So there's a little incentive there. But really, it's a lot of times it's people that want to do this. They're not sure how to do it, and they're looking for some help. Or they've hit a spot where they're like, they just can't get past a certain spot. And then, they reach out to us for help. At the end of the day, it's a TV show. So the casting department's looking for interesting people and interesting stories. And that's what I always tell people. I say, look, sell the sizzle. If you want us to come, remember that at the end of the day, this is a TV show, and the network wants it to be entertaining. Let us know what's unique and different about you or your story.
With the episodes you've had so far, is there one that sticks out for you?
Good question. And I do get that question a lot. We've done 52 episodes now. Not all of them have aired yet. They air, by the way, I should throw that
yes,
plug
when,
in.
Yes.
Saturday nights on FYI at 9 p.m.
9 p.m.
is when they air. We did one for a family right at the end of season two. They were in northern Georgia. They were a family of five moving into 340 square feet. And what I remember most about this family was we were at the tail end of our season. This was last summer. We were beat. We'd just done a run of 18. And it's just like there's not a lot of downtime. And we're just going and we're going and going. And we've been working our way down the East Coast and we're there. And it was had such the chance to be one of those things where it's like, oh, it's the last week of school. And you just mail it in.
Right.
But this family, the Graham family, had such a wonderful energy about them. Husband and wife, three kids, two daughters and a little boy, Elliot, who was about three at the time. They had this amazing energy about them. And they picked up our crew and put us on their back. And it was one of the most memorable builds we've had. And we're still good friends
with
the Grahams. We still end up. They took the house, by the way, and moved to Montana in it, and are just killing it.
Oh.
But that one really sticks out just because of what a great family they were, and the energy that they put into it. Really, they got back from all of us.
Yeah, the other show that I loved that you used to do was when you'd go out with athletes and try to learn their sport, right? Sasha Cohen, you go out skating, or you're going out sailing with Dennis Conner.
Yeah,
I'm imagining that has to be the ultimate high. You're out with Dennis Conner, having him show you how to sail a boat.
No, it was great. It was great. And that was like a little segment that I was doing. Because as I was at Channel 4, I started to realize, when you start out, you're a reporter and you're out in the field and you're interacting and doing all these things. And then as you, move up the chain, you become the anchor, but then all of a sudden your cool job, it's still cool, but it's not as cool. It turns into a desk job. You're just at a cubicle writing stories and then going to a studio and sitting at a desk. And so I was always trying to come up with ways to get back out in the field and do cool things. And that's what I call the segment, Anything You Could Do. And yeah, we, you know, went skimboarding or lawn bowling or skating with Sasha Cohen or sailing with Dennis Connor. It was really just an excuse for me to get to go do cool things. And, you know, in the same time, try and shed some light on these a little bit lesser known sports.
One of the undiscovered jewels, I think, that you were intimately involved with as a host live was the Foot Locker Cross Country National Championship.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, I tell people all the time, people don't know about it. We got the same people come out and watch it. To be honest, I don't think Foot Locker does a great job promoting what this thing is, but it's the only high school championship in any sport, right, in the nation.
It's a true national championship.
Yes. It's a true national championship. The kids qualify. They fly the families in, put them up at the Hotel Del, have people like Meb Keflezighi and Sebastian Coe and Eamon Coughlin, all the legends come in to spend time. And then these kids, I mean, you look at the history with the people who've run there, from Meb Keflezighi to Kara Goucher to Ryan Hall, all these legends who've run there. And you know, it's this little pocket over at Morley Field. To me, the best part was when they introduced the athletes. If anybody has any concern about the future of this country, every one of those kids was, and he's a debate team captain. He's a straight-A student. He's going to Cornell. He's obviously one of the greatest runners in the country. He's in the band. You're going, oh, my God. These kids are the most overachieving characters I've ever heard of.
Yeah, no, it's – and listen, I wasn't intimately involved in the running world before coming to this. Actually, I got that gig because Matt Vasgersian, who was the Padres announcer, now works at MLB.com, he couldn't do it. And he said, hey, I got a guy that I think can take over. And that was my introduction. I ended up doing it.
I think you were there for about 10 years, weren't you?
I was about eight. I think it was about eight. Yeah. It was right in that thing. I only stopped doing it because Tiny House Nation. I haven't been there the last 2 years.
Yes.
So it was about 8 to 10 years of doing it. And that my experience coming into it a little bit naive, not really fully understanding what it was, I started studying about it. And I was so blown away by what you're talking about, the quality of person that these athletes were.
Yes.
But then also the sheer sport of it.
Yeah.
And the idea that it was a true national championship. I mean, like every one of these kids had won their, what we call CIFs here.
Yeah, they had won the region,
Yeah, and then had gone to a regional, like a state meet, and then qualified for a regional. And then, if they get in that top
eight, like, I think, top eight men, top eight women from each region. So it was like
10. I think it was 10.
Was it 10?
It was 40.
Okay. Oh, right, okay.
It was 40 total. And so it's a top 10. And then they'd come, all of them champions, and like you say, compete for a true national championship. And we had some great races.
Yes,
I mean, in a lot of ways, the girls' races seem to always be the really exciting ones.
Yes, where someone would be coming down the stretch and they'd collapse like 50 feet from the finish. You're going,
it's a 5K.
The
finish is brutal because the second time through, it's a slight uphill, and you're just like trying to turn your legs over. I mean, it was really, really fun. The other thing that I thought was pretty interesting was all those kids knew each other.
They did. They raced against each other. Like,
and whether they'd even seen each other, they'd heard of each other because they're checking the websites. They're looking at times. And so I would talk to these kids beforehand, and they'd be like, oh, yeah, I can't believe, so-and-so is right over there, which is like, just another, like
another
junior.
Another one of their kids,
place. And it was, that was really, really fun. I enjoyed doing that. It was on Fox Sports Net for a while, and then they brought it in-house. It was just an internet broadcast. I think that's what it still is today, but it's a pretty neat event.
Well, what's cool is a lot of the athletes who you were covering have become Olympians since then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know.
They broke world records, and they're all, it's pretty amazing when you look at, I think it was Alan Webb, Ryan Hall, and Meb back in 2000, something like that. And you're going, oh my God, every one of these kids is special. So besides bringing back playing through, it sounds like Tiny House Nation is keeping you busy.
Tiny House Nation keeps me extremely busy. And it's a little bit, if I'm being totally honest, it's a little bit of, careful what you wish for, because I worked so hard to get this, and now I do it, and it's wonderful. The only rub is I'm away a lot. I have a family. I have a yes. young son who's turning 4 in September. That has been a tough transition, because up until this started for me about 2 years ago, I was always home. You know, as a sportscaster, I just worked out of the studio. I didn't really travel that much. I did 230 days on the road my first year. Last year, I just did 170.
Wow.
It's better. But it's a lot of time away.
Yeah.
You know, right now we're on a break in between seasons, so I am like, I'm going to the pool and the beach and doing all kinds of stuff as much as I can with my son, which is great. But the good news is we got picked up for another season. We had 18 more shows that we're going to start knocking out.
And what season
July
is this?
July 28th. I get back on a plane and head to Massachusetts, and we start building.
Now, what season is this?
That's a great question. Because
they all blend after all, I'm sure.
Well, it's not even that they blend. It's that, you know, according to the network, what the network calls a season, what our production company calls a season, and what my contract calls a season are all different things. So for the sake of argument, we're going into season 4.
Okay. Now,
that's the best answer I can give you.
Okay. Your dad was a handyman, right?
Yes, yes.
Does he watch the show and call you up and go, what was Zach thinking? This is what I would have done.
Well, no, he's in awe of Zach. Zach's come out and stayed with me a couple times.
Yeah.
And my dad, it's really funny because I'm living in Coronado.
Yep.
It's where I grew up. I'm on this show that's a little bit of a phenomenon. It's starting to come up, and a lot of people see it.
Yes.
Nobody here cares about me because I'm just a kid that they grew up with. Zach came to town. It was like he was the mayor. Everyone's like, oh, I got to meet Zach. And my dad's like nervous to meet him. I'm like, come
that
on, guys.
That is funny. How about a little love here? That's the reason I went into
it's
this.
It's pretty funny. But it's great. And, my dad does watch and he asks questions. Well, what about this? Did that happen this? Or could you guys, you know, try and pull one over on us? He'll always ask me behind the scenes questions.
When you're talking about 18 episodes and the creativity part, that's the part that gets me. Someone like a Zach, who is obviously incredibly creative.
Yep.
Has he done some stuff where you're going, I have no idea how you came up with that? You got this, basically, I tell people, okay, he's got a door that converts into a kitchen table that now is the bathroom. And you're like, how does he come up with this stuff?
I don't think he even knows. I mean, I think sometimes he's amazed.
Yeah.
And I always talk to him about that. He admitted to me, somewhere halfway through our last season, he's like, man, after one particular tough episode, he's like, I think I'm out of ideas. Like, I don't know how I'm going to come up with the next one.
Because he can't do the same thing, right? It's not like he can do the same thing.
He tries not to, you know?
Yeah.
Or it's the same thing. It's addressing the same problem, but now you got to come up with a different way to do it. Because I've already done it this way once, and like because of TV, you don't want to keep repeating it. So, you know what? He has this very unique ability to look at complex problems, find simple solutions that are very creative but also beautiful. He has that rare mix of being able to think up the solution and then also execute the solution. You know what I mean? He's not just a guy that can draw it up and figure it out. He can then also do beautiful woodwork and make these mechanical solutions just using wood and hinges and magnets, you know?
Love it. Hey, John, so good to catch up with you, man. I'm so proud
Absolutely,
of everything
Bob.
You've done. It's really cool. It's great to see you when you were doing Channel 4. And it was what I used to love doing is when we were doing the my All Out show. And we'd always end it with one of my CAF profiles. And I loved it when we'd come back from a CAF profile and you guys would like be wiping tears away. Because those were pretty. Those are
really great ones.
That's great stuff that you've
been doing. I heard you say you guys have raised
$75 million.
$75 million for Challenge Athletes.
Yeah,
that is so impressive.
You need to.
Really
speaking of that, because of what we built a building here in Mira Mesa that you need to come out and see. It's we always wanted to have a building. This thing was going for 2.4, and you're basically industrial area. We got it for 1.6, and we told the architects, listen, all of our athletes are missing body parts. They're in wheelchairs. We want this building to be as flawed as they are. So we don't want any straight lines in this building. and there's no straight lines in the building. And it's very, very creative. You would love it as a guy who obviously is into architecture. Cool. You got to come visit.
Right. All I need is an invite.
Yep. Anytime, baby. We'll set it up. John, congratulations on everything you're doing. Again, John Weisbarth has been our guest. Check out Tiny House Nation, 9 o'clock on Saturday nights on the FYI Network. That's A&E's FYI Network. We are getting brought to you by ToughManTry.com, EveryOne.org, RunCatalina.com, our Challenged Athletes Foundation. We've raised over $75 million to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. Check us out on iTunes or on Babbittville. Subscribe to our newsletter. And remember, endurance lives here.